85 for more information.
The Voice of the Cape, 91.3 FM stereo.
Drive Time, 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.
Voice of the Cape, Drive Time. Welcome back to the show. I mentioned that we felt there's snow in the air. And Marwan Morat has sent me some pictures saying that there's lots of snow on the ground in Ceres. In Ceres, looks like a snowy wonderland. Only thing missing in Ceres is Santa Claus. Something of deep concern to us at Voice of the Cape is that we know our social media pages are a platform for debate and reflecting a freedom of expression, but, and this is but in uppercase, we simply cannot allow racist and bigoted comments on our pages. That's offsides. Some of the personal attacks against the president and his ministers, such as Nkosazana and Dlamini Zuma, are just downright disgusting. And we as a radio station at Voice of the Cape cannot condone this absolute racist abuse. Not only is it un-Islamic, it reflects extremely badly on the Muslim community. We can be rest assured that our webmasters are going to be taking a more vigilant approach on our social media pages. And if your commentary becomes racist, derogatory, and that kind of stuff, you are going to be blocked. You're entitled to your views, yes. You're entitled to feel unhappy. You're entitled to feel unhappy with individuals. But to insult them personally is simply offsides, and this radio station, if you do that, is going to blow the whistle on you. Yes, you. Stop looking so guilty in the corner there. And on that note, we're trying to get hold of our next guest to talk about the situation in Kashmir. Kashmir Civitas, an international civic society and advocacy group committed to Kashmir. Hoping to get online with that one. But let's listen to some beautiful sounds in the meantime. And online is our special guest. We're going to be talking about Kashmir Civitas, an international civic society and advocacy group that focuses on the scenario in the troubled territories of Kashmir. Online is Associate Professor of Political Science and Chairperson of Kashmir Civitas, Dr. Farhan Mujahid Chak. Dr. Chak, assalamu alaikum and welcome to Cape Town.
Wa alaikum assalam. Thank you very much, Shafiq, for having me. It's a pleasure.
Tell us something very quickly about the historical background to what has been happening in Kashmir recently. India stepping up its occupation and invoking and not invoking, in fact, cancelling out certain key legislation that now entitles Indian citizens who've got nothing to do with Kashmir to come in and buy property, for example. Just quickly give us a background to that.
Fantastic question, Shafiq. You're absolutely right. Basically, we can trace all the developments that are happening right now as we speak to August 5th, in which the Indian government, led by this fascist political party, the Bharatiya Janata Party, decided to strip the region of its autonomy. Now, the question is that whether or not it was a legitimate autonomy is altogether a very valid question, but it's not relevant to our point. It did offer some protections. It offered protections in regards to residency rights, protecting Kashmir culture, etc. Now, what August 5th did is it nullified those protective measures. And then over the last several government has step by step trying to erase Kashmiri identity by all kinds of illegal maneuvers, and the latest being what you can refer to as the domicile law. This ultimately takes us to what their real agenda is, which is a demographic change. Settler colonial project, the naked ugliness of it is in front of everyone in the world to see quite clearly. And they are now allowing, it's ridiculous, someone could have gone to school for a few years and they're entitled to have residency and have actually better rights and protections than the indigenous people of Kashmir, of the region. What's also important to kind of briefly highlight is that by nullifying and deoperationalizing Article 370, they also have thrown out the so-called right of return and basically nullified any rights that Kashmiris who were forced at gunpoint to cross over into Azad Kashmir or different parts of Pakistan, or many who came to South Africa or Tanzania. They have now no right to go back and claim a residency.
Yeah, I mean, it's very similar, isn't it, to the Zionist project. A lot of people are making these comparisons.
Absolutely right, Shvi. And it's a very strong comparison. As a matter of fact, we just finished with a documentary that will be airing soon on a tale of these two occupations and the similarities. And Zionist kind of extremist mentality is very similar to the Hindutva extremist mentality and similar to all extremist mentalities in which they view in a certain type of self-exceptionalism in which the other person or others are not entitled to the same rights. And unfortunately, now with the COVID-19 pandemic, with the border dispute rising with Nepal and China at this very moment, we are in a very, very dangerous situation.
Now, there's also something that we need to emphasize in terms of Indian-occupied Kashmir in particular. There's an amazing ratio of how many soldiers there are or how many Kashmiri citizens there are to the amount of Indian soldiers. Historically, at the moment, it's the biggest occupation on the planet, isn't it?
Absolutely right, Shafiq. And that's something that has now become more and more known. It wasn't for a very long time. Imagine, estimates roughly vary, but you can be confident enough that it ranges between 1 to every 8 Kashmiris. Some people give it 1 to every 9 or 10, but if you include the paramilitary forces and the mercenaries that have been flown into Kashmir in droves on these private military aircraft, we're talking about, you know, at some level, 1 million soldiers, upwards to 1 million Indian soldiers. How can anyone claim a territory? And just imagine the cost of it. Mm-hmm. Imagine the poverty and good people in India, poverty-stricken and with no governmental support, and a fascist government is spending hundreds of millions of dollars daily to maintain this type of occupational army force, and not including the administrative, because that's another thing they've done, Shafiq. Mm-hmm. They have removed all Kashmiris from any administrative post of seniority. So not just the leadership of the police force, but the entire administrative apparatus. It is really right in your face, blunt occupation. And before the Congress Party would have been more wily, it would have selected and it would have been much more sophisticated in how it's trying to appease and even spending billions of dollars. Now, none of that is there. None of that pretense is here. They are just blunt, in-your-face occupation.
Now, you've mentioned the word mercenaries. I do believe that there are a number of mercenary forces in Kashmir from other parts of the world. What parts of the world do they come from?
Well, when I'm speaking of the mercenaries at this moment right now, even according to the Indian official website, they claim that resistance to them doesn't mirror even about 250 people. So when I refer to mercenaries, these are people coming from various states of India that have bought into this RSS Hindutva agenda, mm-hmm, and have been flown there for purely as a right-wing fanatical force that is also able to claim that they're not part of any state or army, so they're not they don't have to be abiding by any of the rules and regulations. Unfortunately, in today's world, a lot of countries are using these proxies both inside their borders and in other occupied territories or in other countries to kind of push their agendas and then claim that they have nothing to do with it. So that's one of the strangest things. But there's a large segment of people that are coming from UP, coming from areas wherever there's a high concentration of racism against Muslim populations. And unfortunately, you have those pockets in many parts of northern India.
Now, something else. Everybody's been under a COVID-19 lockdown, but Kashmir has been in a lockdown, a siege, very similar to the one in Gaza, but I would rate it more severe because I can telephone somebody in Gaza today on WhatsApp, can't do it in Kashmir.
Absolutely right. You know, and a great way that at one time it was put to people, and this was actually quoted by President of Azad Kashmir, Masood Khan, he said, Kashmir suffers from a triple lockdown. A lockdown that was in place ever since the late 80s, early 90s, in which you had the presence of large security military apparatus that's only doubled since that time from 500,000, now nearing 1 million. And then the lockdown that happened after August 5th, and then the lockdown because of the COVID crisis. So Kashmiris, unfortunately, have kind of developed this internal, intrinsic response. They expect it, and they prepare for it as well. So usually it will not be far-fetched to find in almost every Kashmiri house rations that can last months. And this is really an absurd type of reality, but the situation is so absurd, and they're at a breaking point. Really, right now, Shafiq, it's really a breaking point. I myself have never seen it ever in all my years at this type of heightened type of desperation and also a panic and fear, not just amongst the neighborhood of what's going to happen. India itself as a state is panicking, and it's presenting itself as being in control, but it's totally losing the plot, and really brave Indians have to come forward and say, listen, we need to stop this madness.
Indeed, because we don't get any media images anymore out of Kashmir, but
we don't.
But stuff does get out. I'm not going to, you know, I'm sure you know that. I'm not going to say how it gets out, but news does get out, and we're hearing that resistance against Indian occupation hasn't ceased. I mean, one has to admire the Kashmiri people for what they're going through and the ways, the creative ways in which they can resist, which is making the Indian government absolutely mad because they just can't put it down.
And you can never put anybody down, if you any population that doesn't want to. Really, you know, if we are honest, if India had pursued a different path, there may very well have been a possibility for some type of arrangement to have been worked out. You know, Sheikh Abdullah did have somewhat of a following. It's questionable whether he would have really won any type of referendum, but it's unfortunately the fearfulness and this a pathological fearfulness of Indian society in general of losing Kashmir. And then they've created these false narratives, Shafiq, that, oh, they were Hindus before and we're going to make them Hindus again. None of this is true. And this is something very important to point out. Kashmiris refuse to accept that history. And they have been feeding this type of myth across all of the region, painting the picture as this was one. And I say a simple thing to people. Let's go back 50 years ago or 70 years ago, when Urdu wasn't the official language of Pakistan and neither was Hindi of India. How did they communicate with one another? They couldn't. There was no common language between them. You're talking about an area that is massive. India itself has more than, you know, 100 languages and dialects. Pakistan itself has 13. So going through the regions and different regions in any one of these countries, you see the magnificent diversity. But the question is identity. Who wants to accept which identity? And at the time of the British leaving, there was an idea put forward. Well, you know what? Let's have these different ethnicities choose what they want. And, of course, one identity was, let's all call ourselves Indian, which was a British word. A British word for an area south of the Indus River, right? Hind. That's what Hind referred to. But what about Balochistan? What about Khyber Pakhtunkhwa? Mm-hmm. What about Kashmir? What about all the other areas? Sindh has a very illustrious history and was a part of the Umayyad Empire. You know, a lot of people might not know that Sindh and most of the region that today became part of Pakistan is a part of the Umayyads. So there is this type of superficiality, a superficial history that was propagated, that it was all one, and these foreigners came and forced us into Islam, and now we're gonna take it back. But that, we have to target that false history. That's not true, right? Sindh was not Hindu. It was Buddhist, actually. And so with most of the areas that became Pakistan or Bangladesh, for that matter, there was a great diversity of people throughout this region. It was never a single political, cultural, or economic unit, ever. So what are they on about? By tackling this, Shafiq, I think we really get to the heart of the matter, the heart of the myth and ideology that makes people so kind of fraught with anger when they think someone's taking something that belongs to them. And I say it doesn't belong to, it belongs to the people that are there. That's who it belongs to.
Absolutely. And Dr. Chuck, there's also something that is interesting. I read something some time ago, and it kind of blew me away, is that the only area in the whole region that has actually got a written history is Kashmir. A written history, India didn't have one, Pakistan didn't have, Bangladesh or what they were in those days, yet Kashmir, this enclave, whatever you want to call it, had a written history long before any of the other regional entities.
Yeah, absolutely right. Very interesting point. You're right. And they have this tradition to this day of writing. And this is something they're very well known for. It's interesting you pull it out, because it's something that India tried to appropriate. And India also tried to appropriate the Buddhist civilization. India also tried to appropriate the Indus civilization, by the way. And there's a great Indian writer, Topper, who actually has been attacked by these right-wing kind of crazies, because she basically has outed the fact that the Indus civilization has really nothing to do with the Gangetic civilization, which could be referred to as what is today known as India. So, but that type of, you know, meticulous and authenticated scholarly writing is what they don't want to come out. It's easier to just say something whimsical and say that, oh, it's all Kashmir. You know, you had the Consul General of the Indian Embassy in New York, and this went viral. He basically said that, and he outlined how he's going to imitate the Israeli model for Kashmir, and it went viral. It went everywhere, and it was such news everywhere. But they are openly talking about trying to enforce a reality that if you go there, it doesn't exist. Kashmir is a vast majority of the Muslim population. There is, there are other minorities, and of course, the Kashmiri culture is very tolerant, very welcoming. But this is something different now. Now it's a brutal, ugly occupation, like it has not been as severe before. We're going in a new direction. So it's time the world community wake up.
Now, our final question in this interview, we see that there's a rising awareness coming out of Kashmir about employing the tactic of BDS. Have you got any information on that?
Absolutely. You know, there's a new BDS campaign that was launched. Our organization is fully encouraging it, supporting anyone. At the end of the day, we don't want war. I don't want any innocent person, any civilian, any person rather, whether they're Indian or they're Pakistani or they're Kashmiri, to have to suffer. India is refusing to come to the table. So the only way that is democratic, that is, it's in the rights of people, is to target those companies that are enabling the crisis, that are enabling crimes against humanity. India is already in violation of the Fourth Geneva Conventions, several United Nations resolutions, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It is in clear violation of all of the statutes that it, it's even in violation of its own constitution, right? So what else can we do peacefully but then to encourage people economic boycott? Any company that is dealing with the Indian military or these fascist organizations that are trying to that pay for these mercenaries to go up into Kashmir, they should be targeted. And I appeal to people to go to the BDS website and to see the list of those major corporations, and that many of them are present in South Africa. Let's make a targeted effort that anyone who is complicit in aiding and abetting these crimes against humanity should be boycotted.
Dr. Farhan Mujahid Chak, Chairperson Kashmir Civitas, thank you very much for talking to us. Everything of the best.
Thank you very much, Shafiq. Always a pleasure. Allah bless you and Eid Mubarak to you again.
Ameen to you.